Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by. Welcome to Innergex Renewable Energy's conference call for the 2016 fourth quarter and fiscal year results. Bienvenue à la conférence téléphonique des résultats du quatrième trimestre et de l'exercice 2016 d'Innergex Énergies Renouvelables. At this time, all participants on the phone and internet are in a listen-only mode. Following the presentation, we will conduct a question-and-answer session for analysts and institutional investors, and instructions will be provided at that time for you to queue up for questions. If anyone has any difficulties hearing the conference, please press star followed by zero for operator assistance at any time. I would like to remind everyone that this conference call is being recorded today, Friday, February 24, 2017, at 9:00 A.M. Eastern Time. I will now turn the conference over to Karine Vachon, Communications Director. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. I'd like to specify that this conference will be held in English and that our listeners on the phone and internet, as well as journalists, are on a listen-only mode. Members of the media are invited to ask their questions by phone after this call. During this presentation, we will refer to financial measures that are not recognized according to International Financial Reporting Standards. Please refer to the non-IFRS measures section of the financial review for more information. Our speakers today will be Mr. Michel Letellier, President and CEO, and Mr. Jean Perron, Chief Financial Officer. I'll turn the conference over to Mr. Perron.
Thank you, Karine. Good morning. The quarterly result for Q4 2016 showed production of 101% of the long-term average, due mainly to above-average production in the hydroelectric sector. For the 12-month period ended December 31st, 2016, production was 105% of the long-term average, due mainly to above-average result in all markets but the hydroelectric market in Ontario and the wind sector in Quebec and France. Revenues for the quarter were 17 million dollars higher than in 2015. This 30% increase is attributable mainly to better results from most of the British Columbia hydroelectric facilities compared with the same period last year and to the conversion of the recently commissioned or acquired facility, namely the Tridoy Creek Hydro facility commissioned in November 2015, the Walden facility acquired in February 2016, the French acquisition made in April 2016, the Big Silver Creek facility commissioned in July 2016, and the MU project commissioned in December 2016, which were partly offset by lower revenues from wind regime in Quebec. For the 12-month period, revenues were 45.9 million dollars higher than in 2015. This 19% increase is attributable mainly to better results in BC hydroelectric market and to the conversion of the recently commissioned or acquired facilities, which were partly offset by lower revenues related to the wind regime in the Quebec wind farms. Adjusted EBITDA for the quarter and 12-month periods were 11.4 million dollars and 32.2 million dollars higher than the same period in 2015, respectively, for the same reason explained just before. Finance costs for the quarter increased by 6.1 million dollars compared to 2015. The increase is due mainly to the interest expense related to the commissioning of the Tridoy Creek, Big Silver Creek, and MU facilities, the French acquisition, and to higher inflation compensation interest on the Harrison Hydro real return bonds attributable to higher inflation during the period. For the 12-month period, finance costs increased by 12.1 million compared to 2015. The increase is due mainly to expense related to the recently commissioned or acquired facilities and to higher inflation compensation interest. For the 3- and 12-month periods, other net expense stood at $0.9 million and $0.3 million, respectively, compared to revenue of $2.9 million for the quarter and an expense of $116 million for the 12-month period in 2015. This latest amount needs some explanation. The significant decrease in the other net expense for the 12-month period compared to last year stemmed from the fact that the corporation had no realized gain compared with a realized loss of $119 million for the same period last year, upon the settlement of Big Silver Creek, Boulder Creek, Upper Leadwood, and Mesgig Ugjerson Montfort contracts at the closing of their respective project financing. For the 3-month and 12-month periods ended December 31, 2016, the corporation recognized an unrealized net gain on financial instruments of $2.2 million and $4.3 million respectively, due mainly to foreign exchange rate swap and interest rate swaps. For the corresponding period last year, the corporation recognized unrealized net gains on derivatives of $2 million and $81.4 million respectively, due mainly to interest rate swaps and to the reversal of the unrealized loss accrued to December 31, 2014 upon settlement of the bond foreign contracts. For the closing of the Boulder Creek, Upper Leadwood, Big Silver, and MU financing. For the period ended December 31, 2016, the corporation had no derivative to be settled upon the closing of any project financing, as all the development project financing were put in place in 2015. No impairment of long-term assets were required in 2016. Excluding the impact of derivative and impairment and the related income taxes, the net earnings for 2016 would have been $29.1 million compared to $19.7 million in 2015. The increase is due to higher EBITDA, partly offset by higher finance costs and depreciation and amortization. Overall, for the year, a very good first six-month period and fourth quarter, partly offset by a below-average third quarter, allowed us to record an excellent 12-month period, mainly due to an above-average production in all sectors except for wind. Our 12-month free cash flows ending on December 31st reached $75.7 million compared to $74.4 million in 2015. Our payout ratio stood at 91% compared to 86% in 2015. This change is due mainly to a slightly better free cash flow than in 2015, which was more than offset by higher dividend payment as a result of a higher number of common shares outstanding to the issuance of 3.9 million shares to Desjardins under a private placement for the acquisition of the French assets and to the issuance of shares following the exercise of stock option and the DRIP. Innergex also announced an increase of 2 cents per share of the annual dividend starting for the next quarter. This concludes my review of the result. I'll be happy to answer your question later on during the call, and I'll turn it back to Michel.
Thank you, Jean. Good morning, everybody. I think it's becoming a little bit of a tradition to the first quarter result, not the first quarter result, the end result, is to come back to the objective that we had set up for ourselves in 2016. So, if you have access to the webcast, there's the presentation there. I'm going to go through the deck, but if you don't, I think that my presentation will be quite clear, and if you'll be also able to view that webcast on our internet site. So, 2016, we said that the presentation is that we're coming back to what we said, and we're reporting on what we actually did. So we said that we wanted to grow our production by 6 to 8%, grow revenue by 9 to 11%, grow our EBITDA by about 7 to 9%, and also maintain our payout ratio below 100%. What we did is that we increased our production by 18, revenue by 19, adjusted EBITDA by 18, and we did maintain their payout ratio at 91%. So happy to report on this one. We also wanted to focus last year on delivering the project under construction. If you remember, we had still 4 projects under construction, 3 hydro in BC and 1 wind project in Quebec. So we wanted all obviously to advance and put Big Silver and Mesgig Ugjerson in COD. We did that. We put Big Silver in COD in July under the budget, and MU Mesgig Ugjerson was put on December 29 within the budget. And I'll come back on this. It's not completely finished in terms of negotiation with the contractor. So is Upper Lillooet and Boulder. So that's why we haven't updated specifically those development costs. But as I can confirm that as a portfolio, we're still into the budget that we have published. There's plus and minus in different area, but as a whole, we're still under budget in these development. So we also are working pretty hard now also on Upper Lillooet and Boulder. If you remember, we had the delay 2 years ago because of a fire. We were hoping to be in COD for Upper Lillooet in Q1, earlier on in Q1. But the main reason is that we are not meeting that is the winter came quite early in BC. That's why also the BC fourth quarter was a little bit weaker than we had anticipated. December and even November in higher altitude, we've seen a lot of snow, and that obviously has slowed down a little bit the construction activities. Nonetheless, we are very very happy to start the filling of the penstock and the tunnel as we're speaking for Upper Lillooet. So we're still focusing on early COD for Upper Lillooet in March. So hopefully we'll make the Q1 target for Upper Lillooet, and Boulder will follow very early in Q2. As you know, BC is important to be on and running for the freshet, and the freshet is coming in those altitudes somewhere beginning of May. So we want to make sure that we'll catch the flow when it comes. If I flip the page, I'm going to update on project development. I just did Boulder and Upper Lillooet. Like I said, I guess I've covered it on the other page. We're maintaining the output in the construction. We're not changing neither the forecast for the production and the EBITDA neither on those projects. If I'm flipping to objective with project financing, we, as you know, it's important for us to focus on our cost of capital and the structure of our capital. So we're always trying to, I guess, improve our capital structure. And we, in that sense, we did refinance Fitzsimmons Creek with a better interest rate. Fitzsimmons was financed during financing crisis way back then when we started construction. So obviously we had a better deal now. Market is much more receptive now than it was at that time. Stardale, interesting fact, we were able to put more than $12 million over the previous financing with a fairly good interest rate as well, so that was good. The other thing that we're working on the existing facility is the St. Paul and Windsor PPA are under negotiation and to some degree arbitrage with Hydro-Québec. We're not the only one. It's a file that is under negotiation with other developer as well. So we're quite optimistic to see some resolution during the year on those. Now, I think that everybody is focusing on our growth. Thank you for the coverage of the early call for the analysts. I've looked at it. We understand it, and thank you for the good words on our facility. I understand that people are focusing on the growth, and believe me, we're working on it. We said that we wanted to consolidate our leadership position in Canada, and we wanted to get a foothold in the international market. What we've done is that, you know, whenever we have the ability in Canada to acquire a hydro facility, we're trying to do it. We did an acquisition of 16 megawatt in BC called Walden. We also, for the first time, entered the France market with the first acquisition of seven operating facility. We call it Wapiti, that project. Acquisition also at the end of the year of 24 megawatt in France again. And we're still working in France in trying to develop the project. As you remember, we have a team of development that we have done a joint venture. These guys are working. We have over 100 megawatt of greenfield project that we have started to initiate the permitting process. So it's a learning curve for us. We're learning fast. And we intend to grow that pipeline of greenfield project. We also are very interested in looking into other projects, obviously, and other acquisition. As we speak, but this week we have also announced the conclusion of the E.ON transaction. That was part of the first acquisition, but we had the commitment to buy it when it was in COD. So happy to report just this week, that we have concluded on that one. We also said that we wanted to explore other market. We've been quite active in Mexico. We have participated in two subasta. That's how they call their RFP in Mexico. A little bit disappointed in the fact that it was very, very, very competitive. And I will not name one of the leader that was winning a big portion of the RFP in that market has been very, very aggressive. And no, it's funny, now they're selling their asset in Mexico. So we're still very interested in the Mexican market. It's just that we have to find a good balance between the type of risk that we perceive in Mexico and the rate of return that is acceptable to that type of risk. So we have learned quite a lot in the last year and a half in Mexico. So we're still open interested, but we have to find a good relationship with return and risk. As you know, we're a long-term investor. We don't want to rush into a market or just grow for the sake of growing. We want to be accretive. We want to be comfortable with our project. So what we would say in French is prudence in Mexico. So we just want to make sure that we're prudent in Mexico. Peru is also a market that we have been active. We've been studying at least 6, 7, 8 projects in Peru. Some have more potential than others. We're actively working on one. It's not a big project, it's around 20 megawatt, but interesting thing in Mexico, not in Mexico, in Peru. If you remember, we are looking into very high capacity projects, so a 20 megawatt in Peru would produce at roughly 90%, 95%. So it's almost the equivalent of a 40 megawatt in BC or in Ontario. So quite interested in Peru. A little bit of a challenge, and like I said, we're committed in one project, but it's conditional on some permitting being finalized. So quite optimistic to have something in Peru during the year. If I'm flipping to the objective of 2017, I think I covered some on the different market, but I'll come back. But having now the Mezquite-Gugjusun project being fully operational for the full year, we'll see a good benefit from there. With the also the COD of Upper Lillooet and Boulder will produce a lot more cash flow, and of course a Big Silver full year will also contribute to the growth. So we're forecasting a growth for production by about 31%, our revenue by 44%, and our EBITDA by 48%. And we want to maintain our target payout ratio between 70 and 80%. We'll come back later on to the target of free cash flow, but we're very in line into these targets and probably much lower in terms of payout ratio. The development, we want obviously to focus on making sure Upper and Boulder are put in service. We want to finalize the PPA in Quebec. And we also have a Brown Lake PPA came into an end. We're right now negotiating with BC Hydro. We think we can find a way to propose a product that is linked to capacity in that area. BC Hydro seems to need some capacity. So working with them in order to change a little bit the profile of production to Brown and possibly even increase the capacity if we can come up with an agreement with BC Hydro on that one. In terms of growth opportunity, Canada is always in our radar. Obviously, it's home, and if we can find growth opportunity in Canada, we'll be aggressive on those. There's three markets that have some activities in Canada. There's Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan, we have a project, we have a joint venture with the First Nation, and we'll be participating in the next RFP. It's a project between 100 and 200 megawatt of wind. New Brunswick will also participate in the small call for community participation project that will be coming this year. Alberta is also on the, I guess, on the activity list, although Alberta will be very, very, very competitive for the first call. We haven't had a lot of activity in the past in Alberta, so we're trying to look into some ways to find an angle to be competitive in Alberta. It's a market that seems to be promising for the long term, so we'll be trying to find an angle where we can create value for ourselves. The other market, the international market, I spoke a little bit about Latin America, Mexico, and Peru, but we also want to focus on U.S. Even if the U.S. right now is a little bit into some kind of uncertainty because Mr. Trump is talking about cutting the corporate tax rate, which creates a little bit of noise in the U.S. But for us, I always said that the PTC, in my view, was great, but I think that now that the cost of electricity, both for wind and solar, are becoming more and more competitive, I would be happier without PTC, and I think the Canadian company can do better without PTC. Obviously, utility will have to pay up a little bit more for their renewable energy, but I think they can. And for us, we see that as an opportunity to be a little bit more competitive because PTC and tax equity provider and structure are a little bit cumbersome, and we like things that can be a little bit simpler. That being said, we have now much better understand of the tax equity. We have made contacts also, so we're willing to play that structure as well. But like I said, I think that this will go slowly into or fade, and we'll have a better angle for us to attack the U.S. market. So we want to have a team in place in the U.S. this year. We're looking into either a small acquisition or hire our own team. We have already started to participate in or getting prepared to participate in RFP. We have secured some land in Alabama and Georgia in light of their future RFP. So we have initiated the I would say the development activities in the U.S. and we want to be there and ready for the long term. Coming back to the projection, I just said that the EBITDA growth now for next year, for 2017, is expected to be about $320 million, which represents 48% increase from last year. And the free cash flow will stand at $110 million, which is about 45% increase. Just a small reminder that that free cash flow is after spending what we call our development or prospective expenses. We have raised the amount of expenses that we want to do from roughly $10 million this year to about $15 million. We're projecting to spend about $15 million this year. So hence, the increase could have been a little bit higher if you're comparing to last year, given the fact that we have acquired some French asset, but we are raising the budgeted development money or investment. So this is why the 110 has not grown to maybe 115. But we think that it's important for us to focus and making sure that we can replenish the future pipeline. So we think it's a good investment. The overview of 2017 to 2020. It's a reminder. I know that most of you know, but it's a good thing to recap what we want to do. There's one thing is for sure, is that we want to remain exclusively in renewable energy. We've been saying that for a long time. Now it's starting to be a good place to be in. Maintain our diversification of energy sources. We love hydro, wind, and solar. We want to make sure that we keep diversified in this sense. I've talked about the international development. We want to focus on France and perhaps some proximity countries around France, but our focus is France for the time being. Latin America is mainly Mexico and Peru for the time being, and obviously we want to consolidate our position in Canada, hence the participation in the Saskatchewan, New Brunswick, and looking into also Alberta. And whenever there's an acquisition that makes sense in Canada, especially in hydro, we'll be interested. So again, we want to focus on high quality asset. That's what we have in our portfolio. We don't want to dilute this type of our portfolio. We want to maintain a low risk business model. We've been known to be conservative and being able to deliver on our promises that will not be changed. Maintain a long-term outlook. That's also very important for us, even though shorter PPA will be available in France and in the U.S. We'll be cautious on our assumption for post-PPA prices. And this is the name of the game, I think. If you want to make acquisition and you want to kid yourself on a very nice and fat return, you just have to be very positive on future merchant prices, and then acquisition and development is very easy. But if you're conservative and making sure that you're looking into the long term and you don't want to have to cut back the dividend, then you have to be prudent, and that's what we are. We want to focus on partnership. If it's in Canada, we think First Nation is a part of a great way to develop a future project in Canada, but somewhere else we are also very open to do partnership. We have proven in the past that we can be a good partner. We want to maintain and discipline acquisition. We'll be focusing on acquisition, but they will have to be accretive to our cash flow. I always said that acquisition that are well done are part of a good balanced portfolio. I always said that I want to have a strong portfolio with generating cash flow. We want to be involved with project under construction. We want to also have a healthy pipeline of project under development, and always looking to have prospective project in order to develop the future. So in summary, again, I think we have a sustainable dividend. By now, you know Innergex, you know us. We want to grow the dividend. We have now a yield about 4.6%, 4.8%. We just increased our dividend by 3% this year, and this is obviously something we want to continue to do. We have a visible growth to our EBITDA of 48% and 45% of our cash flow this year. We've been talking about 2017 for a long time. It's finally arrived. So for this year, we, if everything goes well, we'll have a payout ratio well below 70%. And this is a first from the last time we merged with the income fund. So I'm very, very proud of my team that we have been able to be able to deliver growth and also being able to keep the dividend and reduce the payout ratio. So we've done it, very happy, and now we're looking for the future. Thank you very much.
This completes our presentation. We now invite you to ask your questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now conduct the question and answer session. If you have a question, please press the star followed by the one on your touch-tone phone. You will hear a tone acknowledging your request. Your questions will be polled in the order they are received. Please ensure you lift the handset if you are using a speakerphone before pressing any keys. One moment, please, for your first question. Your first question comes from the line of Rupert Merer of National Bank. Please go ahead.
Good morning, everyone.
Hey, Rupert. How are you?
Very well, thanks. Michelle, you ended by talking about the dividend, and your target payout ratio is 70 to 80%. But with the current dividend, it does look like we're heading for about a 65% payout ratio based on your forecasted cash flow estimate of $110 million for 2017. So can you talk about the decision process on the amount of the dividend increase, and what's the outlook for future dividend increases? When do you think we'll be in that 70 to 80% range?
That's a good question. We had, obviously, a discussion at the board level. Yes, we are going to be, if everything stays as they are predicted, below 70% this year. It's comfortable. we never been there, so it is comfortable. But we don't want to stay, too conservative. But on the other end, we're seeing a lot of activities in terms of acquisition and also in terms of development. So we want to stay flexible. We want to. Our first focus is to replenish the pipeline. The dividend will come, and the increase of the dividend will come. As you know, we've been quite disciplined in the past to increase it on a yearly basis. We are very confident in our ability to grow that dividend, especially that now that the payout ratio, as you're mentioning, will be below 70%. But our first priority, and you guys are telling me all the time, and the investor doing the same thing, is to replenish the growth. So we are focusing on that.
Okay, excellent.
Well, yes, maybe something I could add to this is that it's true that the DPS may seem to be under 70%, but if ever we do some development, it's always that you need to have some equity in order to make the development, and in the case that we have to build something or something like that, and we need equity, we may have to issue more shares, and building something takes a few years before you get the rewards of the income. So it takes only one or two projects, and it may shift the payout ratio easily.
Yeah, and, okay. And this is a good thing. Obviously, if we get busy in developing project, as you know, if you're putting the equity first, it takes 2-3 years to get the dividend from a greenfield project. So we are we're conservative. We know that we'll be able to grow the dividend. It's just that, as you know us, we don't want to cut back the dividend ever. So we are cautious and we'll be raising the dividend, but we're focusing on developing the pipeline.
Okay, great. And then secondly, on growth, can you talk a little more about France? Do you have a pipeline for bidding into the new RFP process in France? And what's the outlook for those sorts of opportunities in 2017?
Well, we're very active now in France. First of all, we have now people on the ground. We are opening an office in Lyon. We are seeing a lot more transaction, obviously, since we have started the acquisition. We're working on many angles. We are also hiring more people to do greenfield project. We have a small portfolio now of over 100 megawatt where we are initiating all the permitting and bring these project forward. Will they be ready for early COD? As you know, France can easily take 4 or 5 years to develop a project, so we've been working for almost a full year now on some. So depending on the COD date requirement, we may have some few projects of our own already being a prospect to submit in future RFPs. But we also are talking to developer or other player in the market to join force. Definitely, France for us is a place we want to see some growth. Acquisition are great. I think with the our friend Desjardins, we are managing to get a decent return, which in a way is not bad when we're able to acquire asset with bringing when we bring the cash flow here in Canada, and we're, you know, high single digit in the 9 to close to 10%. I'm quite happy with that type of acquisition, given the fact that we want to have some kind of a balance between operating and development asset. So we're seeing a lot of activities, and hopefully we'll be able to come back to you in a short period of time with more activities on that side.
Yeah, very good. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
Thank you, Rupert.
Your next question comes from the line of Sean Stewart of TD Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Sean.
Follow up on France. In the in the notes in the MD&A, you referenced an ongoing FIT regime for projects up to 6 turbines. Just trying to gauge how much of what you're pursuing for prospective growth in France would be those smaller scale projects versus larger scale projects that I guess would be bid into the contract for difference structure that'll be in place going forward. And then further to that, as you look at that more competitive procurement framework moving forward in France, how do you think about returns for prospective growth in that country?
That's a good point. Obviously, six units these days can fetch a project in the range of 15 megawatt, which is, you know, not bad in terms of France. There's a lot of those type of project, 10, 15, 20 megawatt in France. Bigger project in France are a little bit more complicated, although there are some. So if we if we're able to get the FIT contract target, we will with some project. We want to develop an approach where we'll be standardizing the construction, supervision, and supply of turbines, so that even a small project can be cannot be burdened by a very heavy head office expenses and what have you. So we want to be flexible and nimble to be able also to create and build those small projects. And obviously, we'll be looking and maybe joint venturing with a local partner for a bigger project. Some of the developers have been, I would say, spoiled in France by the FIT contract. So suddenly, they're a little bit more nervous about RFP and the competition. And I think that is, to some degree, some good opportunity for us, because it used to be in France that people were, starting the greenfield development. They were bringing the project to a certain point, and then they were selling to private equity or a bigger, bigger player. But this is a little bit more difficult now to do for them, obviously, because on our RFP basis, it's a little bit harder to get a premium on non-PPA project. So for us, we think that this is an opportunity. Now, yield in France will be probably tighter than some greenfield project were developed under the FIT program, but it will not be much different than Canada or other places. And probably, like I said, I think France have a lot of players, but on the other end, those are not huge projects, and to some degree, I think that the competition will be strong, but fair. Alberta might be more competitive in that sense. You know, those projects can be 300, 400 megawatt project in Alberta, and that is a game where a lot of big players are interested. We're developing 25, 30 megawatt, 35 megawatt. It's not necessarily the cup of tea of all the big players. So we think that France can be a sweet spot for us. We can help local developer and yet not necessarily having to compete against the planet.
Understood. And one other question on Mexico. You referenced the competitive RFPs. Any update you can provide on the partnership you had with the Federal Electricity Commission on the hydro opportunity set in Mexico?
Yeah, that is still going on, but it has been slowed to some degree because I think that CFE is digesting what's happening on the market. There's a few projects that they wanted to look in hydro side for capacity mainly. For the time being, we haven't seen a healthy premium for capacity these days. So we'll see how it goes, but we need to see a little bit more willingness to pay for capacity before seeing hydro being competitive again. Just a small reminder that solar prices were in the range of low 3 cents per kilowatt hour in the last subasta. So that doesn't leave a lot of room to be competitive for hydro unless they put a capacity premium on it. So and I think that Mexico these days is a little bit on the shock after the election of Trump. We all seen the pesos being hit and the bond, the local bond being, hit as well. So 150 basis points on the bond, and we've seen the pesos from going from 11 to 1 for Canadian dollar to close to 16 in less than three months. So I think that people have to readjust a little bit to what's happening in Mexico. And that might be an opportunity also. So suddenly people might realize that Mexico needs a little bit of a premium in terms of return.
That's useful context. Thanks very much, Michelle.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Nelson Ng of RBC Capital Markets. Please go ahead.
Great, thanks. Michelle, you mentioned that you're negotiating a PPA for Brown Lake. I believe the Walden Hydro Facility doesn't have a PPA, right? Like, is there a process to get a contract there, and how is it currently being compensated?
That's a good question. And obviously, we're selling our electricity to BC Hydro, but we're not allowed to talk about it. But there's something going on with BC Hydro. I think that BC Hydro is really focused to pass some first project in front of the BCUC. That has been done, and BCUC has supported the renewal of some project that BC Hydro has proposed. So I think that BC Hydro now has a better feeling of what can be accepted by BCUC, and I think things are going to speed up from now. But it's just that we're not allowed to talk about the negotiation around the Walden PPA.
Okay. All right. My next question is in terms of your budgeted, I guess, $15 million of development expenses for 2017. Like, is there a very kind of big picture breakdown of, you know, whether it's like Canada, France, Latin America, in terms of how you or where you intend, like how you intend to spend that $15 million?
A good point. We're hoping to be able to spend. Well, that's a good. It's a good question. It's almost. I would say a quarter in each market. But that $15 million is somewhat flexible. If we, this is only for prospective project, in a sense that if we're starting to have a project that has a PPA or an acquisition or a joint venture that project have PPA, then we're not limited. I'm not saying that we're limiting ourselves to 15, but this is a target for really prospective projects. So as soon as we're into a real project, meaning real project with a PPA or a joint venture, then those prospective expenses switch to development expenses, and it can be a lot more. If we, you know, if we're signing a joint venture with somebody that has already a PPA or a project, then obviously it's not part of that $15 million. So we're hoping to spend more than a quarter of our money in France, because we think that we'll be able to allocate the expenses in a different category in our reporting. And in the U.S., we would love to be able to spend. It's just that if we're not making an acquisition, building an office in the States can take a little bit of time. So even if we want to put a lot more activities, it's going to take maybe before the second quarter, when we will have some people on the ground. Americans working for Energex on the ground. So, and Peru, we are not spending too much money in terms of perspective. We're looking into making a joint venture, and the ability also to start a project, to start the construction on one or two projects. So as soon as we get into that phase, then it's not prospective, it's development expenses, and then the $15 million can be much greater than that. I don't know if I help you to some degree.
Yeah, no, that's useful. Just to follow up on Peru, could you just talk about how the projects are compensated, whether I presume there's like a long-term contract, and like which currency is the project compensated in?
Yeah. The reason why we like Peru is that there's a 20-year contract provided by the government on U.S. Currency with U.S. inflation. So we like that aspect, and we like the fact that Hydro can still be competitive to some degree, because, like I said, the design or the resources is generous enough to have run of the river project being almost firm energy in the range of 90%, 93%, 95% utilization factor. So the way it works is that you signed a contract with the government where you have firm energy. But in order not to put yourself into a default position in not delivering the electricity, you would sell typically 80% to 85% of your production under a long-term PPA, and then you would sell 10-15% of your production on a merchant plant. So basically, the energy that you're selling under the long-term PPA with the government is firm energy. And typically with hydro, it's ranging from 4 cents to 6 cents U.S. depending on the project. And then the merchant in Peru has been healthy in the past. Now it's weak because the economy has slowed down, given the fact that Peru is really heavy in terms of mining activities. So the spot price is in range of 2 cents now, but it's coming from 6, 7, 8 cents. So our view that the merchant price in Peru will pick up as soon as some mining activities will come back. And we think that the economics of the project are not bad considering the type of risk that we're taking.
Okay. And then just one last question. In France, you had that about $8.5 million high yield loan from a infrastructure fund. I think it costs like about 7.25%.
Yeah.
I think you guys mentioned that was more of a kind of like a relationship loan. So I was wondering, so is the infrastructure fund, like, is there a potential for that fund to potentially take equity in future acquisitions or provide additional loans in future projects and acquisitions?
It's always a possibility. The fact that it's 7.25, it's not so aggressive in terms of yield. The nice thing about it was that they have given us a holiday on principle. So that's the feature that is interesting. But sure, we could. We're talking with a lot of players in Europe, but I must say that they've given the fact that when we edge the euro and bring it back in Canada, I think that the sub debt or an arrangement with a pension fund in Canada is probably a better structure in terms of increasing or reducing our cost of capital and increasing our return. But we're open to all kinds of structure. We're trying to obviously work into financing the engineering around the capital structure is as important as the construction cost and so forth. So always looking to inventive or creative structure that can enhance our return.
Okay. Thanks, Michelle. Those are all my questions.
Pleasure.
Your next question comes from the line of David Quezada of Raymond James. Please go ahead.
Hello, David.
Hello, thanks. Good morning, guys. My first question, just digging into your comments on the U.S. a little bit, and appreciate that your preference for a non-PTC scenario. Should we interpret that as suggesting that would be a longer-term development for you, or if you were considering participating sooner, how do you think about the competitiveness of projects today now that the PTC has stepped down from 2016 levels?
You know, obviously, I would like to see some cash flow earlier on and be involved earlier than post-2020. It's just that right now, it's a little bit complicated to conclude tax equity deals when the tax rate is not set. You know, who's going to take the risk of that? Certainly not me. So it's something that might be cleared in the next 6 months or so if the Trump administration comes up with a plan and then it'll be easier to structure the deals. I'm not so sure I understand the second part of your question, David.
Well, I guess, you know, just a lot of companies have pre-qualified projects with a $23 per megawatt rate. So I'm just wondering how new projects under the 18 megawatts per hour PTC would stack up if they can be competitive.
Obviously, it'll be harder for sure, but you know, I think on the long run, the U.S. market will be able to pay up to a price that makes a little bit of sense. You know, with the PTC, now we're seeing some wind farm or some wind PPA as low as 2 cents, even breaking the 2 cents. So it's nice for, it's very nice for the utility, for sure. And it was great to introduce renewable energy in the States. But do they really need that PTC anymore? I don't think so. I think that, you know, without a PTC and having some good projects and I think that the price of electricity for wind can be in a range of 3.5-4 cents, which I think is still competitive compared to new combined cycle, especially if you're introducing eventually the carbon cost to those natural gas projects. So I think that we're confident that we'll find places in the States to establish a long-term presence with the thinking that project will have to be competitive and without PTC. Of course, it may take a little bit more time, but like I said, the PTC structure can be nice, but if too much risk is put into the developer, then is it worth it? We're cautious on that aspect.
Okay, fair enough. I appreciate those thoughts. My only other question, just on the outlook or what you're seeing so far for the hydrology in BC, like you mentioned, we've had a lot of snow out here, so I'm wondering what you think that that means for the hydrology looking into 1Q17.
Well, I'm pretty sure that the skiers in BC are very happy. there's a lot of snow, especially in elevation and even in lower mainland. There's fairly good snowpack on the top of the mountain. So actually, I think that the spring will be and early summer will be very good because that snow will melt. It's just a matter of how fast it will melt. but so far, there's a lot of potential kilowatts high up in the mountain range. That's why we want to make sure that Boulder and Upper Lewitt will be ready to catch it when it comes. Right now, it's even a challenge because the river in altitude are very, very low. Mind you that last week there were a lot of rain, so that did help. But January was weak in BC. February now is over our long-term budget. And hopefully, once we have passed mid-February, usually things are starting to melt and create a little bit more revenue. So, no, I'm very positive about what's happening in BC in terms of snowpack. But in our business, since we're run of the river, the spring runoff is always something quite variable because if it starts to rain heavily and it's warm, then suddenly the snow goes fast and obviously there's big flood, but then you cannot catch the full benefit of that snow up there. So you're very optimistic, and of course our guys in BC are all ready to make sure that the spring, the power plant will be ready to catch the spring runoff. And in Quebec, it's been great all winter, and we have a early spring to some degree now in Quebec. It's forecast today is again fairly warm with rain. And same thing for tomorrow. So I think that most of the south project of Quebec will see quite a bit of water in the next few days. So Quebec is good. Ontario is good as well. The wind is a little bit slow in this winter, both in Quebec and in France. So kind of not worried, but I have high hope that the wind will pick up in the next few weeks in Quebec and in France as well.
Excellent. Thank you very much. That's all I had for now.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Robert Catellier of CIBC World Markets. Please go ahead.
Hi. Congratulations on the results, and thank you for the presentation. I just have two quick follow-up questions here. When you look at your development expense for prospective projects at $15 million, unless something changes, can we expect that to be the run rate for other years as well? Is this the new level of spending you expect?
That's what we're forecasting. Like I said, this prospective expense is something that obviously we had to beef up from the previous year. You know, maybe 3-4 years ago we were spending $3-5 million. Obviously, we were more focused on delivering on our existing development portfolio. I think that $15 million is the type of money we have to spend in order to get busy in the greenfield development. But we will adjust that amount if we feel that we need a little bit more, we will. And if we have too much success, then we'll slow down on it. But we're very focused in the next few years to fill up the pipeline.
Okay, and I think in your comments in the presentation, you discussed your willingness to consider opportunities for hydro acquisitions in Canada. So I was wondering if you could just discuss the state of the market in terms of number of opportunities and relative valuations.
That's the problem in Canada. It's a good problem because I think that, and actually some of you are seeing that as a great asset for Innergex. The existing long-term PPA that we have for our hydro is great, and hence there's not that many. And the price for new hydro assets or existing hydro asset under long-term PPA in Canada is very expensive. Although we have been able in the past to find a little opportunity, and Walden was a good one, we're still looking into BC. There's a couple of possibility here and there. And also, one thing that we're starting to create a little bit more knowledge inside the company is to be exposed to some degree for merchant market in the States if we acquire existing hydro facility that needs a little bit of reinvestment or re-permitting under FERCs. So this is a segment that we could try to be a little bit more focused and aggressive. Mind you that we're very cautious. We don't want to have too much exposure on merchant, but as we grow, our portfolio can support a little bit of exposure, especially if it's a good long-term asset in terms of hydro in the States. But we'll be cautious. We've seen a few transactions that we thought were expensive. I think that some people are seeing the price of electricity in the States going up a little bit faster than we think. So this is where we have a little bit of a difficulty to be competitive to acquire existing hydro facility in the States, and there's a lot of opportunity up there. There's always a transaction here and there in the States that can be looked in for merchant hydro. So we're starting to warm up to the idea. It's just that we have to find some comfort in the risk and reward relationship.
Okay, thank you.
Sure.
Ladies and gentlemen, if there are any additional questions at this time, please press the star followed by the one. As a reminder, if you are using a speakerphone, please lift the handset before pressing the keys. Your next question comes from the line of Ben Pham of BMO. Please go ahead.
Hello, Ben. Hey, hello, morning. I was wondering if I could follow up on your, some of your comments about the payout ratio, and I understand that you want to retain as much cash as you could for development. That's always a good signal. But it seems like the sub 70% with you guys adding 40-year hydro contracts, it seems very conservative to me. And I was wondering, how do you guys think about the potential positive benefit on your valuation by paying out 75%? It seems like your cost equity can improve by almost 1 or 2% versus retaining cash, because it seems like paying out 75%, you're only really, you know, paying out almost $10 million of free cash, and you're still retaining $25 million. So, I mean, how do you guys kind of reconcile the two opposing deltas there?
I'd love to have a private chat with you to make sure that if we raise the dividend, we'll have a direct positive on the valuation. We're kind of, and I agree with you, Ben, you know, obviously if we have a better cost of capital, it's easier to make acquisition, it's easier to issue stock in the future in order to support the development. I completely agree with this. It's just that it's not that easy to understand where's the sweet spot, and to some degree we're seeing our peers trading at a much lower yield than ourselves because they have a much lower payout ratio, so hence people are thinking that they have the ability to grow their pipeline and they have a vision on future pipeline. So it's a delicate matter that we're really focused in trying to understand and find the good equilibrium. Mind you that we're forecasting 2017 being around, you know, below 70%, but we haven't achieved it yet. So it'd be nice to have a full report year to show that we have actually reached that type of payout ratio, and then we could readjust perhaps the payment of the dividend. So we thought it would be prudent to not get excited about raising the dividend too fast, making sure that we still deploy the strategy of putting the all the project in commercial operation and start to see the benefit also from our investigation and investment abroad, mainly in France and in other places. But I agree with you, Ben. Always been an advocate of thinking that in our business, equity and cost of capital is king. And obviously, even if we have a healthy payout ratio, we cannot support fully by internal cash flow all the development and acquisition we would like to do because it's a capital intensive business. So the game is to make sure that you have a good currency in order to be successful in future development. I agree with you, Ben. It's just that it's not that easy to find the sweet spot and the perfect formula.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for the color, Michel. That's all I had for today. Thank you.
Pleasure.
Mrs. Vachon, there are no further questions at this time.
Thank you, and we thank you for taking part in this conference call. Please do not hesitate to contact us should you have any other questions.
Thank you very much, everybody.
Bye.
And have a good weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our conference call. Please note that a replay of the conference call will be available on the Innergex website. The press release, financial statements, and the management's discussion and analysis are also available on the Innergex website at www.innergex.com in the investors section. Thank you. You may now disconnect your line.